Estamos en vivo. We are alive. Bienvenidos and welcome to una edición muy especial of the Familia FFP podcast. I'm Jorge Martin, and we're live from West Coast Happy Hour with one of the true dual threats anywhere, Bo McBrayer, better known on Twitter as Bo underscore McBigTime. He is a fantasy analyst known for his picante takes. Love it. I love that hashtag, which are really caliente unto themselves. But then add in that he's the founder of Big Time Flavor Co., which has created fans coast to coast with a tasty blend of sauces that is its own brand of caliente. He's also a member of the esteemed Girl Dad crew. Big ups on that one. Big ups on that one, fellow member. So estamos bien. Estamos bien. It's a noble team to be a part of. Let's welcome in Bo, and let's keep in mind he also speaks Spanish, so he's going to bring a little heat in two languages. Gracias, Bo, for joining us, mi amigo.
Voy a tratar de hablar en español de todo el tiempo, pero si no es posible, si estoy cambiando las palabras, está. Pero estoy muy emocionado de estar aquí contigo. Es un placer. Muchísimas gracias de tenerme aquí.
Gracias a usted por aceptar la invitación. And your español is really good, my friend. Muy bien. And, you know, as growing up, and, you know, it's funny. Like, I grew up in a household where my parents spoke to us only in English. But outside, it was primarily in Spanish. They spoke to us only in Spanish. And outside of the household, it was all in English. So it was kind of like best of both worlds, just learning the Spanish and everything. So, I mean, I got to know, before we start, how did you pick it up?
So, I mean, I grew up in a really small town. It's a farming community. And so a lot of the friends that I had growing up were the sons and daughters of migrant farm workers. It was a really small town, but in summertime when things were in harvest, it would be a big influx of migrant farm workers. Their kids would go to school with us, and they didn't speak any English. So, I mean, I was like, it's like I'm a personable kind of guy. I started picking up words when I was in elementary school. And then when I went to high school, I took Spanish all 4 years. And then I went to college and took 4 more years of Spanish advanced level, did like a Latin American studies as my minor. And so I ended up writing some poetry in Spanish. I ended up like studying like Latin American, like post-colonial poetry and creative writing like that. So it, for some reason, it's just clicked with me. Like, oh, if all my neighbors and their abuelitas are in the kitchen and they're cooking, and it's like, they're not going to feed you if you don't know how to ask what you want. So I learned that what I liked, and then how to order it. And then I learned that unless you have a job in the kitchen, you stay out of the kitchen. And so it all kind of intertwines together, because I mean, my grandparents practically raised me. Both of my parents are entrepreneurs that worked a lot. So after school, all summer long, I would go to my grandparents' house, and they're in a neighborhood. They were only white people in the whole neighborhood. It's like we'd get everybody, all the neighbors really nice to each other. Some of them spoke broken English, but they'd still bring tamales over every holiday, and we'd trade them for our whatever we cooked, because my grandpa was a chef, and so he was cooking, the neighbors were cooking, and so it all runs together. Me learning Spanish, me learning how to cook, how to deal with flavors, my ability to cook in Mexican cuisine now, it all goes back to when I was a kid. It's like, that's just my whole life is just learning how to speak Spanish so I know what to eat.
food being the international, you know, international tongue. But I will say also one thing that you all that I'm sure you learned quickly. If you say poquito más, you're not getting poquito más. You're getting mucho más.
And you can't say estoy lleno either. They don't believe you.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Oh no, that's you're taking
me
back to
the best I could ever do is not ever being called flaco.
You know what? Sometimes it's a compliment, or sometimes it's just meant to, you know, as just a nickname. So gotta love it. Oh god.
Stay forever.
Oh yeah. Oh god. Well, we're gonna get into the food. Vamos a hablar de la comida en un ratito, but I'm curious about one thing in particular. You shared with me offline what your favorite team is, and you're a NorCal guy, so I need to know, how did you come across your favorite team?
So I'm not I'm not ashamed to be a Cowboys fan. I'm ashamed to go through what we have gone through the last 25 years. But when I was, I'm 34 now, so I'm not ashamed of that either. I'm 34, which means in the early 90s, I was 5, 6, 7 years old, just getting into football. I was already a sports fanatic. I love baseball. I love football. And it came down to when I was watching football, when I was at that age, there were two teams that were on TV all the time. The 49ers, being an NorCal guy, I'm right in the middle of a 49er country. And then also the Cowboys. The Cowboys were always on TV. They're always the John Madden pass seven all game, like, touchdown Cowboys, Emmitt Smith. It's like, that sticks with you forever. Because when you get to the early 90s and it's that Cowboys dynasty with Aikman, Irvin, Emmitt Smith, and all the players. And then, of course, you have all my friends that are like, oh, Niners this, Niners that. And some of the people I didn't really like the Niners. And so it was pretty easy for me to be like, the Cowboys are better. So why wouldn't I root for them as a 6, 7-year-old kid? I mean, if you love football and you were watching in the early 90s for the first time, that's why a lot of Cowboys fans came to be. And of course, I had plenty of chances growing up to change my allegiance, but it just never happened.
No, they are. I mean, it's funny. They could be, a 500 team. They could be a 5-win team. They're going to be on national television half the time anyway. And I predate you a little bit. So I go back to the Roger Staubach days. And so Roger Staubach,
younger than you are. Then.
Thank you. It's the shaved head. It helps. It takes years away. But yeah, I go back to those days and I tell you, it's, they were, I grew up a Ram fan and it was them and the Vikings that always seemed to take the Rams out of the playoffs. And it just seemed like the one difference between the Rams and the Cowboys was number 12, Roger Staubach, he's a Hall of Famer. He's a stud. And it was just like, I grew up not liking him. Then I started to read about him. I'm like, dude, the guy's like as squeaky clean and like as nice a guy as there is.
True American hero.
Yeah. He's like Captain America. He's probably like one of those guys.
His nicknames is Captain America.
Yeah. You can't just, it's like, if you don't like him, you don't like Christmas. Come on. Yeah. Forget it. I gave up on that one. So, offline, I'll tell you a funny story that I heard from a friend of mine who's a columnist in the NFL. So, at what point did it go from, being an NFL fan to starting to really enjoy fantasy football and start to want to create content?
I've been the same person, like just building up to this moment. And then I still have goals that I want to realize in this space. But from the time I was 7 or 8 years old, starting to watch football, you fall in love with football. Football's easy to love. It's such a great sport to bring people together. It's all the pageantry, the big events that surround football, like the Super Bowl parties, everything you do surrounding football. And then of course, food with my family is just, it all links together. Mm. And from an early age, I was just a fanatic for stats. Like I was the kid with the Sports Illustrated, ESPN, the magazine subscription. My parents, they're like, oh, you don't have to buy him much. Just get him a magazine subscription for these three places. And he's going to sit all day in his room and I'm either reading books or I'm reading sports almanacs. Like I think my parents got me the ESPN Sports Almanac every single Christmas from the time it started back in the mid 90s. Through the time they discontinued it. Like they would always go to Barnes and Noble and get me the Sports Almanac because I would just read it cover to cover and try to memorize the stats. And that's the kind of like everybody in my hometown, basically, because it's so small, know, oh, Bo's the sports guy. You could probably ask him any stat and he's going to pull it up. And so then I go to high school or junior high and I was a basketball player. I was a football player, baseball player. I played all the sports. I mean, you kind of had to, or you were just lazy and didn't do much. In a small town, everybody judges you for what you don't have. And so I played all the sports. I wasn't overly good at them, but I knew the games. Like I understood the games. And so when I got to the point where I was just starting to write better, like I had a knack for writing from the beginning. So I was always the person there like, hey, here's the stat book from the game that you just played in. do a write-up and we'll put it in the local paper. And so in seventh grade, my first ever published writing was in seventh grade when I wrote a summation article of a tournament that we went to. And we didn't even win the tournament. We got second place in the tournament. And we weren't expected to win any games because we only had six active players in the basketball team. And we went all the way to the tournament, got second place. We lost by 1 point in the championship. And I did a write-up on the tournament. And they published that sucker pretty much unedited in the on the front sports page of the local paper. And it was a huge deal back then.
And you got a byline? Did you get a byline? I got a byline. Oh, sweet.
Byline at 12, 13 years old. And then I did a few more through high school because I was a late bloomer, so I didn't play a lot of football in high school, but I was always around the team because I knew the game. I knew how X's and O's worked. And so they had me take the stats during the games and then go and write an article. And then I would also, for the head coach, because he was a good family friend, he would ask me, hey, can you break down our play selection? Because, I mean, the playbook was wing T. It's pretty basic. There's maybe 20, 30 plays total. He's like, do our balance sheet, do our play charts, and tell us what's working and what's not. And then game plan, help me with the game plan for next week's game. So I'd be in the film room with the team preparing for the game, just like providing the head coach with the information that he needed to build his game plan. And so I learned a lot about the breakdowns of film study and just basically how to tactically attack the chessboard in a football way. And then I'd write the article after the game for what happened.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. You know, it's funny. I see so much of that common ground in people, different people in the fantasy industry. And it really just starts with the love for it. And when did content creation for fantasy start to come up? I mean, cause I think with everybody, did it all just start like, I could do that. I could do that.
It was not like that for me because as much sports writing as I did through high school, I took a whole different direction when I went to college. And then I actually started playing fantasy football after I started playing fantasy baseball. I started playing fantasy baseball really early, maybe freshman year of high school. And then I was probably a sophomore or junior in high school when I started playing fantasy football, which was not online yet. It wasn't online for me until like 2005. And in 2005, I had my first online league on ESPN when I was in junior college. And the guidance counselor of the junior college, he ran the front desk at the junior college. And he's like, hey, we talk football a lot. Do you ever play fantasy football? And I was like, yeah, it's you take the box scores and you score it. He goes, no, we do it on the internet now. He's like, and so back then you had to get like a card pass to go into the library and get it and like, you had to pay for like an hour or two in the computer lab to get internet access at the community college. And so it's like, I just put it on my tuition bill and I'd go in there and I'd build my teams. I drafted a couple more. And I mean, I never even thought about writing fantasy, but like from that point forward, I was reading Matthew Berry because he started ESPN in 2004. And I was reading everything that he did because I wanted to be better at the game. Never even thinking that, hey, in 10, 15 years, this is going to be there's going to be a whole lot of people that love that content and are going to create it. And so I didn't even get started content creating until last year.
Oh, wow. Well, you know, we're like-minded on that one. I mean, I just dove in last year myself. So it's just kind of like, hey, let's see what happens. No, I love what you've done. Now, you know what? But first I want to jump into where you're a dual threat that I talked about. And I mean, you've gotten some Twitter love for your sauces, but you know, I kidded you that you're a dual threat. How did Big Time Flavor Co. come about?
I mean, that's another crazy story. Oh, lots of crazy stories. I mean, my life is,
this is great.
A whole tornado of just random stuff that flies. And I'm not a very structured person. Like I have a busy schedule, but I don't really like, I'm the opposite of my wife. My wife has everything lined up and it drives her nuts that I'm just like, hey, I'm going to do all this stuff and I'm going to figure it out as it comes. And that was January 2020 is when I was just bored. I had a couple of days off of work and I was bored in the kitchen. It was like 10 o'clock. I wasn't tired to go to sleep. And so I just started like, I was like, oh, there's a Mexican place that's really well known here in Northern California called El Patio, and everything they do is great. But what makes me come back to that place and wait for an hour in the drive-through line, like the only line longer in my town than In-N-Out is El Patio. They'll wait an hour just to get some tacos in that drive-through line, and it's worth it every time because their taco sauce, they give it to you for free in the little 1 ounce cups. Uh-huh. And I'll be like, every time I go through, they're like, oh, this guy again. And this is my line. They're like, hey, do you want hot sauce? And I was like, give me as much as you're allowed to give me. And so I actually befriended the owner of El Patio, and he was going to give me the recipe for that taco sauce. And it just never happened. Like, it just, we lost contact a while after that. And so I never got it. And I was like, you know what? I bet I could recreate that. So I got a bunch of it. I tasted it, tried to break it down, just like trying to use my palate. And I tried to make it myself, and it didn't come out exactly the same, because when I made it, it turned into more of like a thinner pureed hot sauce. And uh-huh. then I had a bunch of hot sauce, like a lot of it. It was everywhere. I had like whole jars full of it, and it's really hot. So I was like, man, I'm not going to be able to go through all this. So I put on my Instagram. I have a food Instagram page at BigTimeFlavor_. And I put it on the page. And by the end of that night, I had about 20, 30 people that wanted a jar, like a pint jar of my hot sauce. And so I had to make more. I was going to have trouble getting rid of it. And there's people Venmoing me money. Like, there's people I was like, I don't want money for it. And they're like, oh, here's 20 bucks. They sent me a Venmo for 20 bucks. I'm like, what the hell? And then all of a sudden, just like, it became overwhelming for me. So I was making this hot sauce over and over again. And then Twitter happened. I mean, Twitter was, and it's been the worst experience, but just being sucked into the portal of Twitter, where you lose track of time, you lose track of everything in your life that's real. It's really a slippery slope, and that all happened to me. Except, I got invited into a dynasty league that was called the Hotbox League, and at that point, I hadn't named the hot sauce yet. And then I sent everybody in that dynasty league a free bottle of hot sauce, and no label, no nothing, just simple bottle I bought off Amazon, sent it out to each person, and they loved it. And so they were like, hey, how much money do you want for this? And I was like, man, I just need to start a business now. And so for a month or two, I was taking all my orders through Twitter DMs. And can you imagine how chaotic that must be?
Oh my goodness.
Even back then, when I only had 200 or 300 followers. And then Scott Fishbowl happens. I heard about Scott Fishbowl. I knew about Scott Fishbowl from listening to Sirius XM Fantasy Radio. So I was like, huh, I might as well just apply for it as a fan, you know, that sounds cool. Be able to bump elbows with all the people that I listen to and follow. And I got in. And then somehow Scott Fish found out that I had a hot sauce. And he's like, hey, let me send you some money for some hot sauce. I don't want you to send me money. I'm going to send you some hot sauce. So I sent a bottle of hot sauce to Scott Fish, and he loved it. And this guy's in the middle of the busiest time of year that anybody in the world is going through. And he has time to shout out my hot sauce that's just barely been named. I barely have a label for it. Shouts it out on Twitter to his many thousands of followers. And then that's when Twitter DMs were not going to work for me. So I bought a domain. I started a website, and I've been adding products ever since. So Hotbox is the only hot sauce or even sauce on the site. The rest of them are seasoning blends that I make, that I've actually been making longer than I made the hot sauce. But now that I have the Hotbox is tied to Big Time Flavor Co. And I've just started to throw in more stuff that I have up my sleeve on the site as I went. So I just up to 5 or 6 products now. And so we're just trying to build the brand and make a business. It's incorporated now, which is crazy to think that a year ago I was taking Twitter DM orders and just shipping it off from the post office next to my house.
So you're in your cocina. Yeah, you're in your cocina in January, and the world turns upside down, and next thing you know, you got a business out of it. Isn't that, isn't that
it's wild.
the beauty that comes out of this. That's fantastic. That's fantastic. And you've gotten a little bit of more recent Twitter love from a big name, Field Yates. Also, that was I know he was on one of your shows recently. And how cool was that?
It's still not real to me. I haven't pinched myself. I haven't like, I'll go back and watch the YouTube video just to remind myself that it did happen. But talk about a real dude. Field Yates is one of the best people, one of the nicest people I've ever met. He just happens to have over 500,000 followers. Yeah. And I mean, it was just like my brand has been good enough to be sponsoring a couple fantasy football podcasts. And so I sent him a bundle of my products just for appearing on one of those shows. And this guy is, I was just like, hey, he's like in the DMs with me, starts following me. I'm like losing my mind. Like, just Field Yates is talking to me, and then he's following me, and then he's sending me his home address just to ship him a bundle of my stuff. And then I'm like, hey, I don't want any money for it. It's just for appearing on the show. If anything, if you have time, I know you're a busy man, just shout it out. And that's usually with people with a lot of followers. I'll just say, hey, don't pay me. Just shout it out. Tell them your honest opinion, because good or bad, I want people to know that people are trying it. Like, mm-hmm. That's the hardest part of marketing, is saying, hey, I tried this and maybe it was too hot for me, but I bet you if you like spice, it's amazing. And then he shouts it out on a comment of the fantasy foodie show that I do with David Mendelsohn. Like, he's apparently tunes in to me dying, eating about an ungodly amount of McDonald's. And he must have been watching it, because he goes on that thread and he's like, that looked painful. Would have been easier if you had Bo's hot sauce. And I was like, no freaking way. This is bad. And then one thing led to another, and he was invited to come on that same show the next week. And I had beers with Field Yates on Memorial Day. Virtually, of course, but insane.
That was a lot less painful, because I know your first one, the spicy one, you were that thing looked like a Survivor episode, a Survivor food challenge.
I made a mistake on that one, because I've had hot stuff before, but I went overboard on the amount that I put on my pork fried rice that night. Like, because we're talking, I had a 2 million Scoville unit sauce, which is, it's not something you want to eat like at any point. Just to say you did it is basically the only reason people buy those sauces.
Yeah.
And I put like 2 teaspoons worth on my pork fried rice and took a big bite of it, and it was painful. And yeah, that's what you can expect from 2 million Scoville units. Like, if a habanero is 50 to 100,000, even my hot sauce is only 200 to 250,000, which is plenty hot for most people. And I just went overboard on 2 million. Just, it was like, I lost my voice from that day. Like, I had no voice for like 2-3 days after that.
Oh, Dios mío, that, oh.
It was dolor, puro dolor.
And that's the Lord that lasts para días y días y días. Oh man, I'm just
de los dos lados.
That was perfect to put in Spanish. Eso sí. But then you had the one with the one with Field Yates, the beers with Field Yates, where you guys are, and he's always talking about how he's a craft brew fan. And I mean, how cool was that? I mean, and as you mentioned, on Memorial Day.
It's still unreal. If it wouldn't have been as enjoyable if Field Yates wasn't such an awesome dude. Like, I grew up following, reading Matthew Berry, and this is Matthew Berry's right-hand man. This is a co-host. He's on TV with him. They're intertwined together as part of the ESPN team that I've been following my whole adult life. And for that to happen to me, just on a random sequence of events that lined up in my favor, and then for it to be like, he was genuinely happy to be there with us. And we're like, you got to remember, these are still real people. They just happen to be more recognizable to more people than me.
and he's good at what he does. And that's the thing. When you're glad that someone's good at what they do, and then they're good people on top of it, that's just fantastic.
Yeah. He's an incredible dude. And I look forward to, pretty much anything. I mean, now that I've accomplished that, I mean, I guess I could sit back and just ride the wave as long as possible. But I mean, I have more work to do. I have more products to release. I have more articles to write, and I have more football to watch. And so it's just going back to work, and whatever's next, I'm sure it's going to be awesome too, but you got to work for it. You got to let your opportunities come from hard work.
And that's the thing, you know, we could get back to football now. I mean, it's, I love what you put down on your Twitter profile that you focus on dynasty and DFS content, which when you look at it, you know, if you look at them side by side, they probably can't be any more different one from the other, because obviously, you know, dynasty, you're playing for 2-3 years, DFS, you're playing for Sunday. How do you approach each one individually? And do you see any consistent strategy between the two?
I really do. And that's why both of them appeal to me pretty equally, is I was a redraft player for a long time. Mm-hmm. And just like everybody else, that was really all there was for a long time. And then as you start getting more products available for players to branch out and try something different, something new, like when DraftKings and FanDuel came to be a few years ago, it intrigued me because it was the kind of game that I thought was more strategic than a redraft league. Is about it's like half skill, half luck, where you're yeah. hoping your team doesn't succumb to injuries. You're hoping that your draft went well, but it comes down to any given Sunday and at the very end. And then I started playing DFS, which is just like, hey, it's you against somebody else who's building a lineup with the same parameters, the same rules. And it's all about probability and math and stats. And I felt that was an area of strength for me. I know how to break down data pretty well. And I know how matchups work. And so as a game, DFS is still pretty basic. You have a lot of competition, which is the tricky part, is you have to understand how to break down the information that sets you apart as well as be better. And that's kind of what drew me to Dynasty a few years ago, is that, yeah, it's you're planning 2-3 years out, like you said, but the strategy is still you're dealing with commodities, you're dealing with scarcity, you're dealing with value. And whether it's long-term or short-term, you still have to play the same game and make good decisions. And so if I'm building a lineup, or if I'm making a trade, or if I'm doing anything involved with either of those sides, I still have the same basic strategy of building value at every turn. Like I want to maximize my return on investment with every move I make. Every decision I make has to be sound. And if I'm taking chances, if I'm flipping coins, the probability is more than 50% in my favor. And that's where Dynasty and DFS are very similar, is that you still have to make moves that move the needle your direction.
And I love, I mean, I actually started playing more dynasty type keeper stuff on the baseball side, which really made, I actually feel like baseball and football, even though they're completely different games, I think just the way you kind of, you know, bend your brain to understand those and trying to find advantages, I think it helps. I think actually the daily part of baseball helps so much. But when it comes to, you know, it's so funny when it comes to I think actually DFS last year, getting more into DFS really made me better at just breaking down the game in general, because it was just, it's so matchup focused, you know. Yes. you knew that Green Bay's running, and you know, running defense was basura last year. You knew that the Ram secondary was incredible, and you know, all those things, and you knew who to attack with which one, and it was actually more freeing. So I love the kind of the breakdown between the two. And that you're so, I mean, finding some consistency between two things that would on the surface appear to be polar opposites. But, you know, and you mentioned redraft. There's so much talk about zero running back, zero wide receiver. Thank you, Dave Kluge. And
that's my guy, Dave.
Oh yeah, he's a good dude. He's a good dude. Go Justin Fields. Yes, Justin Fields will start at some point, Dave. You know, you have to listen to this to get this nugget. Not week one, but we know it's not week one, but it'll be at some point this year. Where do you kind of, you know, land on that spectrum, or do you kind of go in the middle?
So I lean towards running backs because I see a value cliff like everybody else does. After the first two rounds, it's really tough to get a running back that you can feel comfortable with starting every week. Even if it doesn't turn out your way, like if you have an injury, of course, running backs get injured, but so do wide receivers, so do tight ends. Quarterbacks get injured all the time too. If you're fully data centric, you will kind of gravitate towards zero RB because of how often running backs get injured. And so you're looking for a more stable value. I get the whole trying to stay away from fragility, but for me, I want studs that are going to get the most touches. And it's really hard to say that a starting running back that may or may not be a bell cow, it's kind of a dying breed of running backs out there that get a vast majority of their team's carries. But if I know the guy's going to get 3/4 of a team's carries or 2/3 of the carries, and then he's going to get passing down work, I'm eating that up because, I mean, some of these running backs are getting just as many targets on top of their running workload as your best wide receivers. Like Austin Eckler is averaging 10 targets a game with Justin Herbert so far. And so I'm going to value Austin Eckler over a top wide receiver because he's getting the same passing volume and then he's getting carries and he's scoring touchdowns both ways. It's just like the Konami code quarterback that you want to seek out is you have your Konami code running backs that are Christian McCaffrey. There's a reason he's 101 even after an injury plagued season, because you know that the passing game work is built in. You know that you can get a guy that if he's on the field, he's going to score 25, 30 points every week. And that's a constant. Even your best wide receivers might score 25, 30 points, but it's not going to be as often. It's not going to be as predictable when that happens. And so I usually gravitate towards running backs, but if the guy I want isn't there, I'm not hesitating to go get a stud tight end to lock up that scarcity value, because there is a huge cliff after the top 4 or 5 tight ends. And then you have a lot of running backs in the middle that are kind of just like, and in that same range, you have a lot of great wide receivers, because I mean, if you look at the top 50 wide receivers, all of them have a range of outcomes that could end up in the top 12. And so if I have quite a few guys in that range that rounds 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, that I can just keep fill up my running back spot. Like if I have 2 running backs in a flex or 2 running backs in a stud tight end. And then I have a whole line of wide receivers that I want to have on my team. That's what I'm going to do. It's just, I'm going to fill in my lineup with the best player available, but I'm also going to go get my guys. And that's my main strategy is I have a list of guys that I target in each round, and I will overpay or I'll quote unquote reach for those players if it's close enough where I don't think they're going to be back for my next pick. And I don't hesitate to pull the trigger on somebody I believe in.
Now, is there someone at the, you know, obviously it's going to be the back half of the first round for the most part, where that value is just not there, and it's there in a Tyreek Hill, it's there in a Davante Adams. Everybody, familia, you're listening out there. I'm going to put it out here. It's late June. Aaron Rodgers is going to be there, so he's not going to. I'm putting it out there.
I've met Aaron Rodgers personally. I've had drinks with the man. I don't think he's coming back. I think he's done. Just knowing that little bit of personality that he has is he doesn't like you have all these players that might hold out for contract reasons. They might hold out for personnel reasons. Like he has every reason to do what he's doing right now. He has every reason to do that. All the other players that are doing the same thing have a reason to love football and want to play again. Aaron Rodgers has nothing to prove to anybody else for the rest of his life. He's won a Super Bowl. He's won multiple MVPs. He's done everything he set out to do in the football realm. And if he quit tomorrow, like I said, hey, I'm done. It was nice. He pulls a Calvin Johnson or Barry Sanders. I wouldn't be shocked in the slightest because it's a very unique individual, just like his owner said.
Yeah,
unique individual was accurate, except in the wrong context. He's unique in the fact that he doesn't need football anymore. He doesn't need to love the sport as much as everybody else anymore. And so what drives him is totally different from any other player.
That's really interesting. I mean, I know he's really he is different, obviously. You know, anybody who watched The Bachelor knows that his relationship with his family is complicated at best. I just, to me, the one thing is I keep looking at it, and you know, being around these guys when they've got that window to be great, to be who they can be. They all know that that window is fleeting and it closes at a certain point, and he's still there. I think he's got 5 years in him at least, and you know, just with no major injuries. I think
ability wise, nobody doubts him. Nobody doubts Aaron Rodgers as a player. And if you did after 2019, that's understandable. He didn't have the best of seasons. They end up trading up to draft a first round quarterback because he struggled at the end of 2019. And all signs are pointing towards that kind of being his moving on point was coming up. And then you start to see the distrust, the draft pick really ticking him off. And he took it personally. And that's the kind of person he is, where it's like, hey, if I feel like I still got it, and I feel like I can still win an MVP, we can still go to the Super Bowl with me running Green Bay. Like, why wouldn't he be pissed off to see Jordan Love get picked in the first round? I'd be pissed off if I was in Aaron Rodgers' shoes. I'd be doing the exact same thing as him. And now he goes out there and he proves that he was right the whole time. He goes out and wins MVP, throws 40 touchdowns, only 4 picks, legendary season. Like, just runs away with all the awards, earned every bit of it. And then he sits back and says, your move, Green Bay. And Green Bay digs in deeper, and that was the wrong move. And now that once they make that move and say, hey, we're not trading you, and you're going to report to camp, he goes, nope, that's it. Once they dug in deeper, they lost it.
It's and you know what? To me, the thing is, I hope he ends up doing something that, number one, he comes out ahead and doesn't retire, that they give him some semblance of what he wants. Because honestly, when it comes to pro sports, I think the NBA has the superstars, the LeBrons, the Currys, you know, those guys that they deserve a seat at the table. They get a seat at the table. You know, I go back to the Magic Johnson days with the Lakers. He had a seat at the table. Jordan should have, but he had a certain semblance of a seat at the table. Aaron Rodgers is one of those guys that he wants is what Tom Brady had. And to me, that's he earned that. Russell Wilson has earned that. Patrick Mahomes has that. So it's like, why not? I mean, you know what, if you hear the reports coming out of Cincinnati, Joe Burrow kind of has a little, you know, has some say in the organization. Why not Aaron Rodgers, one of the potentially maybe the 5 greatest quarterbacks of all time?
It's just a cultural mismatch. You have you know, a player who's earned every bit of respect, and then all of a sudden the franchise outwardly shows that they're disrespecting that franchise player. It makes no sense. Like, don't disrespect your best asset. I mean, you know how hard it is to find a franchise Hall of Fame level quarterback? Yeah. I mean, I know you guys are spoiled where you've had 3 of them now, but like, you're not going to keep hitting 21 if you keep flipping over cards. I mean, that's not how the game works. And the fact that the guy just wants respect. He just wants the Packers to show, not just say, but to show that they respect everything he's done for them and continues to do for them. And they're not doing that. They're simply disrespecting him at every turn. Every public look into that franchise is Aaron Rodgers is being disrespected, and everybody knows it. And except for the Packers, just keep digging in deeper, and they're losing fans. They're probably going to lose their franchise quarterback, either via forced trade, like where he's like, hey, I'm going to retire if you don't move me. It's like move him. Get something for the guy. If he's going to retire, you get nothing for him.
Yeah. And you know what? And you're talking about getting back-to-back Hall of Fame quarterbacks in a franchise. The 49ers in your backyard right there, they had Montana and Young. They've been searching for Young's replacement for almost 25 years. Yep. I mean, you had the Jeff Garcia time. You had the Alex Smith and the Colin Kaepernick time. But none of those guys is a Hall of Famer. And you can't, there are some guys that they're just different, and I think you need to get them. But you know what? I actually, you know, we veered off. I love where we went, but the original where we were at, when we got on this tangent, was at what point do you break away Is there that what's the tier break where you break away from running back and you're going to consider a Tyreek Hill, Davante Adams, or a Travis Kelce back half of the first round?
Yeah, for me, that whole first round is running back targets. I don't see any wide receivers going in the first round on my boards. Like, I don't think I've done a single one where I've not taken a running back or Kelce. Like, let's say I'm at 109 or 110, and if it's most of the leagues I'm playing in are either tight end premium or it's enough teams like 12 to 14 or even 16 or 20 teams. Like, we're in that 20 team dynasty where if you don't get your stud tight end, you're going to be waiting around and you're going to be left holding the bag. So I've taken Kelce late in the first a few times, but I mean, I like the back half of the first for Nick Chubb I love Cam Akers, but I think he's more of like that early to mid second type running back this year. Because Daryl Henderson's still there. He's a great running back. I mean, people disrespect Daryl Henderson more than they should. And Cam Akers' volume is not guaranteed. And no matter how talented he is, McVay is not going to ride him as hard as people think he is. I mean, he's still a young back, and they have a lot to prove in that system with a new quarterback. And so I'm looking at Austin Ekeler in the back half of the first. I'm looking at Nick Chubb. I'm not going for Joe Mixon that early. I like Joe Mixon, but I mean, the trust is still not there. Even for somebody who loves Joe Mixon, you feel a little shaky pulling the trigger that early on a guy like that. There's always a chance he burns you like he does just about every year.
Yeah, he helped me win a championship in 2018, and I feel like he's been trying to get back to that level ever since. And I've pulled around and put together some preliminary rankings, and I put Najee Harris ahead of Joe Mixon. So I think he's going to be
Najee Harris is an absolute stud. Mm-hmm. And John Helmkamp said this, tweeted this out a couple days ago, and I completely agreed with it. And it's pretty controversial, is that other than Jonathan Taylor, Najee Harris is my preferred running back above anybody else from the 2020 class. So that includes Gibson, Akers, Swift, all those guys that did really well last year and are bright futures ahead of them. I'd still take Najee over all those guys except for Jonathan Taylor.
And he loves him some Jonathan Taylor. I think he'd want to give Jonathan Taylor's Hall of Fame speech. Introductory speech.
I mean, I'd probably fight him for it, because him and I have been locked arms and skipping down the merry path about Jonathan Taylor since he was at Wisconsin. So when he started going off early last year, we were both just victory lapping together. So shout out John Helmkamp. Him and I are the JT for life guys.
Is he a guy, I was going to ask you about a little bit later, but is he a guy that you're targeting in any draft?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And if I see him slip to the mid to late first, I'm gobbling JT up every single time. I've taken him as early as three.
I don't know if he's going to get the receiving volume. I had one of the beat writers, Zach Kiefer from The Athletic, on, and he still thinks that Nyheim Hines is going to get enough receiving workload but Jonathan Taylor is definitely going to be one of those guys that's just going to get a ton.
I agree with that too, but I don't see those things as detracting from the other, because what we saw last year is even with Taylor in the backfield, is they had Hines in the slot. He's a very athletic, talented receiver in his own right. And so you can get both things can happen. Jonathan Taylor can get 50, 60 targets, maybe even 80 targets, at the same time that Hines gets 80, 90, 100 targets, because that offense is going to move the ball. They're going to move the ball well. And Jonathan Taylor is very talented. They're going to get the ball in his hands any way they can. And Hines is that change of pace. And I think both things are possible. Jonathan Taylor can get his receiving and Hines can get his receiving. We saw it last year where they were both playable. Like, I think I had one redraft league where I started, they were my running back one and two on a team. I had Hines and Taylor starting at the same time, and it was not a bad venture. It was like starting Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt together. It's like, very I don't similar. Have any fear at all, because they have their own roles. The system is set. They each get their own packages of plays and formations. They're both on the field a lot together. I'm not afraid to start both of them.
Eso. And now, is there anybody you're fading that you're kind of like big X? And no,
it's for me, it's just about like how sure am I that they're going to hit their ceiling? Because I'm a ceiling kind of player. I draft first ceiling upside, and then I'm breaking it down to how probable is it that they hit their ceiling? And so if I'm looking at a player like Michael Thomas, who I love his volume, but how sure am I that the quarterback that ends up starting for the Saints is going to help him reach that ceiling that we saw with Drew Brees at quarterback? And I'm not so sure. And so I like Michael Thomas, but I don't love him to the point where I'm getting a lot of him, because a lot of the guys that I'm drafting with are higher on Michael Thomas. And so he goes, and I'm like, oh, I guess I don't get Michael Thomas because somebody liked him more than me. And that's, I don't really dislike any players, but if I'm looking at a choice, I'm going with the player that's most likely in my mind to hit their ceiling.
And you know, it's funny, they're going in kind of the same range. We kind of started an argument over it, but I was like, okay, well, if somebody takes Michael Thomas, I'll take Keenan Allen. Cause it usually seems like he's right behind him. And
I love Keenan Allen
all day. We talked a little about DFS, and it's growing so much in popularity. Hopefully in California, we get betting, but at least we have DFS in California. Por favor, man, you know, we got the veladora lit for it. So it's growing up in popularity and ways to play. I mean, do you think, I almost feel like we're scratching the surface on the possibilities of DFS and how it's going to continue to grow the fantasy football industry. Where do you kind of come in on that one, where the future of DFS?
I don't know how much the game itself is going to branch off of what it is already, but the popularity is definitely growing. And that's a good thing, because we're seeing every year I do DFS football, it's getting more and more competitive. You get more sharks in the water. You get more fish in the water too. But a lot of players that are starting out for the first time, they have a good knack for it. And so you see them be successful right off the bat. And so, yeah, I mean, it's harder to win big bucks at DFS than ever before, but it just means you work harder to find those edges, work the probabilities a little harder. And I mean, you can still make money doing it. It's a lot of fun just to play. And you just have to know your limits. And so I see the popularity growing and continuing to grow for many years. It's too much fun to not be successful and grow. And that's what you're going to find, is that they're going to innovate, keeping it fun and keeping more people engaged and bringing more people into the realm. And that's the best part about DFS, is that it doesn't matter what the contest is. The contest is pretty much the same for everybody. And it's just like, oh, if you got $5, you can enter this tournament.
Yeah.
Just best of luck, dude. Buena suerte. And that's the thing, is that you want more people to be involved. The more people are involved, the more money you can win. I mean, it's less likely to win it, but I mean, your odds go down, but your payout goes up. And so we want to see that popularity continue to grow so that more people can enjoy what we enjoy.
Oh, I love it. I think we're going to, at the end of the season, we started dedicating a Friday night show to DFS. And I think now that we're streaming, we're going to do the same thing. Friday night happy hour talking DFS. And just after all the injury reports and everything, it's going to be awesome. Yeah, so it's going to be caliente. So, muy cuidado. So you talked about the Scott Fishbowl 10, and now that we're coming up on number 11, you and I are both in there. I'm in the U2 division. Which one are you in?
Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, we got like three people in our networking group that are in that group. I think I've seen a logo for that, and it's so
much fun. Yeah, it's a great group already. It's, I mean, the whole event's so exciting. I mean, I got a really good taste of it last year as a fan. And I mean, it's still kind of weird to call myself an analyst. So I'm just going to say I'm a fan who knows a lot about football and writes about it. So, it's awesome. It's Scott Fishbowl is everything a fantasy football player and fan just loves. And then as a person, like what's not to love about something that brings people together over charity. Like we're doing all the charity stuff before the draft even happens. And that's the thing, is the draft is over in a few days. It's a slow draft, but people move along, and some of the divisions will be done in a week and some will be done in 3 or 4 days. But the charity happens. It's for like they just opened the Potathon donation line today. Click the link and donate to the Fantasy Cares. And they're doing amazing things for people in need. And everybody's donating to their own causes, and they're adding charitable elements to their own home leagues. That's what it's all about, is the thinking about other people, meeting new people. Like my follower count exploded last year when I got into the fishbowl, because you just use that hashtag SFBX one time and everybody who's in it is going to see that. And they're like, oh, you're in it. Oh, I'm going to follow you, and you're going to follow back, and everything. It's just it's a ball of yarn. That's a lot of fun because you're meeting so many great people from all over the world. Like one of my best friends on Twitter is Jaime Thomas, and he lives down in Mexico, and he and his daughter are in SFB11 together. Like he has his young daughter in the Scott Fishbowl, and she's probably going to kill all of us. She's a ringer. She's peligrosa.
Muy peligrosa. Muy peligrosa. I actually put U2 division because one of my buen amigos, Mauricio Gutierrez, down from Estadio Fantasy, he's a huge U2 fan, but he got placed in the Bob Marley division instead. So I told him, well, I'm going to play in his Estadio Fantasy Bowl, which is in fact, if you, I'll give you info on it. It's fantastic. I was playing with people from Ukraine and Brazil. It was incredible. And actually in my division, there's a guy from Ireland. So it's awesome. So love it. So what's your advice for me being a SFB rookie?
Just immerse yourself in all of it. Soak it all in. Meet as many people as you can. Just the outreach. Like people are going to be reaching out to you because you're in it. But do the same thing. Do reach out to everybody else that you find that like if I'm scrolling through my timeline and I see somebody's invite email, I'm liking it every time. Yep. I'm going down. And yesterday there was a big wave on Father's Day. It was awesome to see so many people that like some of them I was like, I already thought they were in. And they were like some of my favorite people that just got in yesterday. And I was like, oh, this is awesome. And like retweet. I was like, that's the bet. Like the excitement around just getting into the tournament is great. But yeah, donate your money, find your own charities, donate to the Potathon. I'm donating all the proceeds from bigtimeflavor.co to the Potathon during the Potathon to Fantasy Cares. And it means a lot to me to be able to give back and to do it in the name of fantasy football. I mean, it's just everything is a perfect storm. Scott Fish and Ryan McDowell are just amazing people that they work way too hard. I don't know how they do it all. But they've been really special and supportive to me the whole time ever since last year. And it's something I want to be a part of, and I want to be as much of a part of as I can.
So let's go into our Spanish en español. ¿Cómo puedes comparar Hotbox Gourmet Sauce con uno de tus favoritos jugadores del NFL?
Es el jugador más picoso, más bravo y más peligroso y fuerte en toda la liga. Aaron Donald. Es que se da miedo, se tiene el poder, tiene el picoso, el picante, y está muy fuerte, pero no está muy grande. Aaron Donald es igual que yo, que no está muy alto, no está muy, he's not very big, like by defensive tackle standards, but yeah, todo el mundo tiene miedo de Aaron Donald. Se da respeto, big time hotbox, se da respeto de la picante y también el sabor.
Ese hombre es un caballo, you know, living in LA. I love to see Eric.
Un monstruo.
Yeah, exactamente, un monstruo. He is...
Un monstruo de la salsa.
Monstruo de la salsa. Oh, my goodness. Oh, mi amigo. So, I usually close it out. I close everything out with, taco talk. And yes, you've got the taco season, SZN, which is very popular. You've had a lot of experience with going in and out of so many Mexican households. What are your favorite taco meats to put on? What are your favorites?
I'll give you a top three. So my favorite taco meat is birria.
Oh,
I like birria de res con consomé. Taco, mm-hmm. Queso tacos con consomé de birria.
Mm-hmm.
And carnitas is number two. Carnitas is just the best. If you do carnitas right, you'll never have anything better. It's not easy. Like, as simple as carnitas are, like, ingredient wise, if you don't do the technique right, it's terrible, right? It's like you can mess carnitas up so easy.
That's why I only eat my mom's. I only eat my mom's.
And if you go to certain restaurants, you're like, ugh, I don't want to order carnitas because it's not going to be right. It doesn't look right. It doesn't smell right. It's not going to taste right. And so, I would totally agree with, but carnitas, like, I know how to make carnitas, so I do it a lot. And so I have the big kettle and the manteca and the jugo de naranja and the Dr. Pepper. it's de freír de dos horas.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And it's just like, it's not good for you, of course, but you're going to remember, like, you're going to, if you walk by a taqueria and you smell carnitas, you're going to like, you could be on late for work and you're going to turn your brain tells you, I got to have it. And then I actually have my third favorite in my fridge right now marinating, and that's carne asada.
Oh yes. Oh yes. Is there a favorite beer you like to, do you use beer in your marinade?
I don't, but I do work for my fish tacos, which is probably my fourth favorite. Is I get halibut and I'll beer batter it with Negra Modelo.
Oh, and,
yeah, really good.
Con mucho sabor. Oh yeah. Oh, oh well,
I use the taco season in my marinade for carne asada.
Oh man, maybe making a road trip to Sacramento to for some carne asada, mi amigo. Oh man, oh this is. Bo, gracias so much. I mean, this is awesome, beyond awesome. This was so much fun. We've hyped everything up, but kind of put it in a bow. how people cómo te pueden hallar? Where can people find you?
Pueden encontrarme en at @Bo_McBigTime on Twitter, BigTimeFlavor.co. And if you want to check out all the stuff I cook on Instagram at BigTimeFlavor_, that's my food porn website. A lot of graphic, really nasty stuff. You can't have that screen up at work because people are going to look over your shoulder. They're going to be like,
explicit.
¿Qué es eso? ¿Qué es eso? ¿Dónde puedo encontrarla? ¿Dónde puedo encontrar esa comida?
Lo necesito.
Yeah, if people see you on my Instagram page over your shoulder, you're gonna have too many friends. It's gonna be a mess. So keep it on the down low. Like if you're on my page, so that's basically it. I write for a lot of different outlets. Going for Two, Hammercast, NimbleWithNumbers.com. That's where my DFS articles are gonna be. There's Dynasty Vipers. I'm writing Dynasty articles now. So it's a lot of work, but it's a lot of fun. And that's what I'm here for. I'm here to have fun. I'm here to meet people. And I'm here to, somewhat showcase what I can do and get better at that too.
Well, this guy's like Lamar Jackson, man. He could throw, he could pass, he could run. Yeah, he's the Konami code. Konami code of fantasy football and food and food porn. So gotta love it. Gotta love it. Well, mi amigo, gracias, 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 gracias. And everybody, gracias. Eso es todo. Oh, fue un gran placer, gran placer. And everybody, fue un gran placer tener Bo on our show. Thanks again to Anchor for being our hosting network and making sure Independent Podcast gets out to the familia community. Please make sure you're also checking us out on YouTube right here. We're live still. And so subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, and you get original content at familiaffb.com. A lot of my stuff on there. I'm behind a couple articles, but stuff's coming. You can find me at JorgeMartin17, and you can find our Twitter and Instagram at FamiliaFFB, as well as our FamiliaFFB Facebook page. Otra vez, well, mi amigo, thank you so much. Looking forward to more conversations, hopefully some cervezas and some carne asada someday soon. And
Hasta pronto. Mil gracias, Jorge.
Mil gracias. And everybody, remember, todos somos familia.